On Mondays, we read from your emails. During our show on the sexual assault case involving basketball star Kobe Bryant, we debated the issue of accusers and anonymity. We received two emails on the subject, both from people who work with victims of sexual assault. Eva Du Daner in Charlotte, North Carolina wrote, "I was a rape crisis counselor during the 1990s at a small feminist agency in Santa Barbara. Out of the blue, on my walk this morning, I thought, it's time we started naming both the accused and the accuser in sexual violence cases. This is one step that might lead to ending the stigma around being a survivor of sexual violence." Michelle G. Mallon of Lakewood, Colorado took the opposite tack. "I spent years working on a rape crisis hotline and working for victims' rights and absolutely agree with the need to protect the privacy of sexual assault victims. That being said," she added, "I believe there is a case to be made for protecting the alleged perpetrator as well. If convicted, put their names and faces on the side of a bus and punish them fully. But in this country, we're still innocent until proven guilty, and unfortunately, there are cases where rape charges are fabricated and alleged victims can have ulterior motives for levying that charge." Our program on division in the Episcopal Church calls for several corrections. The first is grammatical. Ruth Council says she enjoyed our program on religious schism, but she writes, "Please note that the word Episcopalian is a noun, as in I am an Episcopalian. The word Episcopal is an adjective, as in the Episcopal Church, not the Episcopalian Church." Also in that program, a caller incorrectly cited the year a woman named Anne Askew, who was burned at the stake by order of King Henry VIII. Don Kirkpatrick from Westchester, Pennsylvania, set us straight. Anne Askew was executed in 1546. Thanks for that. And from the Reverend Matthew Rowe, rector of St. Patrick's Church in Zachary, Louisiana, "The information given by Phyllis Tickle about the three-legged stool of Anglicanism is incorrect. It is not, as she said, faith, tradition, and reason. It is rather scripture, tradition, and reason." Well, we needed some help on this one, so we've invited Phyllis Tickle back to join us. She's the author of The Shaping of a Life, A Spiritual Landscape, and it's good to have you back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Phyllis, this question refers to the theological foundation of the church. What's the difference between these two phrases?
Well, actually, there's no question Father Rowe is absolutely correct in what Hooker originally, the great theologian of early Anglicanism, said. And those three names for the three legs of the stool, scripture and reason and tradition, are still in currency. There's no question about that. What one means, however, by scripture is really the question. And that sounds silly, but It means how does one interpret scripture? What is the discernment that happens with scripture? And if you will remember, leading into my use of faith as the third leg of the stool, I spoke of discernment, that is, discernment by faith. And immediately after this, your last caller Wednesday was another priest who said he had always heard that it was a reason, tradition, and community. I had never heard it put that way. But as we chatted, he and I came to the conclusion that what we were really saying was scripture in terms of discernment by faith in community. In other words, you just can keep expanding this label forever. But it's trying to get to the same sort of concept, which is that scripture alone is not what Anglicanism rests on. Scripture as it is discerned by faith in community. I've had another letter or two since Wednesday from another priest or two who had an entirely different name for the third leg of the stool. I had never heard the community one that turned up on the show, but these others also were sort of new to me. But it really is, historically, Father Rowe is absolutely right, but Anglicanism's middle name is change or evolution or progression.
Well, speaking of change, we should note that since you were on the show last Wednesday, the Archbishop of Canterbury has called an emergency meeting of the world's Anglican leaders to discuss the approval of a gay American bishop.
That will happen in mid-October, yes.
I assume this is the first meeting of its sort.
It will be the first, yes, in quite a while. It's certainly a session extraordinaire. And the first time when we will have to face the possibility that a First World Communion's action has come up hard against what two-thirds world communions can accept and still hold the body unified.
Well, we'll be covering that meeting when it happens. Thanks again for coming on with us.
Well, thank you.
Phyllis Tickle is the author of The Shaping of a Life, A Spiritual Landscape. If you have questions for a guest, comments about one of our programs, or a correction, we'd like to hear from you. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Please include the topic of the show in the subject line. Tell us where you're writing from, and if necessary, give us a tip on how to pronounce your name or where you're writing from. Our producers are Susan Lund, Setsuko Sato, Justine Kennan, and Alicia Montgomery. Brendan Banizak is our production assistant. Joel Riddle is our intern. In the control room, Chad Campbell is the director. Kevin Wade is the technical director. He gets engineering help from Vince Muse, Mitch Eaton, Tom Carpenter, and Michael Cullen. Ellen Silva is the senior editor. Sue Goodwin is our senior producer. The executive producer of Talk of the Nation is Leith Bishop. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.